This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Rex Factor.
This week, Henrietta Maria.
With your hosts, Graham Duke and Ali Hood.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to Rex Factor, reviewing all the Queen and Prince consorts of England, from Elswith to Prince Philip. Now, today, it's high drama in the form of the Civil War, or the War of the Three Kingdoms, as it's sort of technically known now.
What? Is it?
There's different circumstances and different timelines for England, Scotland and Ireland. But we're just going to say Civil War today.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But because they weren't the same kingdom, of course.
Yes, anyway, it's the Civil War today because we are reviewing Queen Consort of Charles I, Henrietta Maria, who is a controversial figure in her own right, a largely negative reputation as well. So we'll be seeing whether this is fair, whether or not she deserves a reassessment.
Biography!
Henrietta Maria was born on the 25th of November in 1609 in the Louvre Palace in Paris, named after both of her parents, so King Henry IV of France, Henrietta, and Marie de Medici, Maria.
I love that period of France, you know, Graham, of French history, rather, all the architecture and everything, lovely. So she's going from pomp and splendour, and I'm presuming, is this going to be one of those things where she comes back to England with a thump? And here we are in St. James's Palace with someone taking a leak against a wall.
Now, despite having three older brothers, her father declared he would have given 100,000 crowns for her to have been born a boy.
Oh.
Wow. Despite that, though, he seems to have doted on her. She had a large laughing mouth and looked quite like him.
Yeah. Was it his first daughter?
Yes.
Yeah. That's just him being all bravado and then get 3 years old and no way. No way you couldn't melt.
Well, sadly, he doesn't get to that point. It's tragically, after a very successful reign in which he had ended France's wars of religion, that Henry is assassinated when Henrietta's less than 6 months old.
Oh dear.
So her mother, Marie de Medici, ruled as regent for Henrietta's older brother, Louis XIII, until 1617, when he takes full control and forces her out of Paris, with Henrietta going with her.
Right.
In 1619, though, they're sufficiently reconciled that they come back to Paris, so Henrietta's courtly education can begin. It's not an academic education, so she's focused more on things like riding and dancing and that sort of thing, but religion is key. So her mother supports the Devo movement, which seeks to return the French Catholic Church to its former glory after all the depredations of the wars of religion. So Henrietta very much inherits this sort of missionary zeal for Catholicism. Mm. And of course, yes, that is Henrietta's destiny, to be a queen somewhere. And in 1623, the French court receives a surprise visit from Prince Charles of England. But he's not there to see Henrietta. He is, in fact, travelling incognito with the Duke of Buckingham on his way to woo the Spanish Infanta.
Okay.
Always dressing up the students. Yeah.
So this is presumably at a time when the royal dressing up box was fresh, no sign of dents that in years to come.
Charles later claims that he had fallen in love with Henrietta when he came to Paris, watching her rehearsing a dance, but in reality he doesn't seem to have paid her very much heed because he was mindset, off he goes to Spain. Oh. Unfortunately, the Spanish Infanta was similarly disinterested in him, so he ends up returning to England without a Spanish marriage and determined instead on a French marriage. So Henrietta, of course, then becomes the next marriage target. Negotiations proved challenging, though. He said of that how she's been inculcated with this sort of Catholic zeal. It's to the extent that her godfather is Pope Urban VIII.
Oh, blimey.
Who obviously has quite serious misgivings about his goddaughter marrying a Protestant prince.
Yeah. Or massive olive branch.
He doesn't seem to have seen it quite in that way. Cardinal Richelieu, leading the negotiations for France, might be a familiar name for anyone who's encountered the Musketeers, Three Musketeers. Cardinal Richelieu demands that James commit to freedom of religion for Britain's Catholics.
Yeah. Okay, oh, we're still in that point, are we? Is it still outlawed? Are we
back
there?
It's illegal to hold mass. You don't have Catholic priests or the Vatican isn't represented. And
okay.
Exactly. And James had a... Because James is still king when they're starting the negotiations. He's got this vision of sort of uniting Europe and trying to bring all the countries of Christendom back together again.
Yeah, but so that's that olive branch thing. I mean, is there any element of that from Pope
from Mount Papo. Well, his consent is only given when Henrietta basically swears in writing that she will raise her children as Catholics.
Oh.
And also she will act as protector to British Catholics and endeavour to secure Britain's conversion to Catholicism.
Oh, that last one and the first one really... well, all of it.
Yeah. Actually, no, now I look at it, this is all very, very Catholic. That's not really what we had in mind.
I was searching around here for a silver lining, and no, I'm afraid you are just looking... You are just Catholic, isn't she? Does she have to hide that?
She does not hide it, as we'll see. So in June 1625, Henrietta comes to England, initially staying at Dover Castle, where the now King Charles, and he'd just become king, comes to meet her. She threw herself into his arms with boundless and inexpressible affection, and then caught Charles looking at her feet and wondering if she was wearing high-heeled shoes, because he'd been told that she was short, and yet she came up to his shoulders.
Mm.
She replied to him, "Sir, I stand on my own feet. I have no help by art. Thus high I am, and am neither higher nor lower."
Yeah. That's fine. She's in a playful mood.
Mm. She is 15 to Charles's 24.
Mm-hmm.
Which obviously a bit dodgy now, but actually it's not that big an age gap at this sort of period. And their first impression of each other seemed to have been pretty good. After dinner on their marriage night, Henrietta put on a private performance of a saraband for Charles, which is sort of an erotic dance with castanets.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I thought initially when you started saying that, there's an obvious route we could go down here. Oh, private dance there. But that is actually... right.
This is a popular dance in the Americas. Apparently it had been banned in Spain for arousing tender passions, captivating the heart with the eyes and disturbing the tranquility of the mind.
Yeah. Well, straight away you'd think, I've got absolutely the wrong end of the stick about this Catholicism business. I'm in for a wild ride.
Duke of Buckingham was watching Charles's reactions and wrote to Louis XIII that he was sure Charles would soon be siring children.
Yeah.
However, their relationship initially proves rather strained, with Henrietta's very spirited character clashing with the more withdrawn and reserved Charles.
Mm.
She's not able to speak any English at this point, although obviously Charles can speak French, and she's the first openly Catholic queen since Catherine of Aragon. Or Queen Consort, I should say. Obviously, Mary the First was Catholic, but
she was
the ruler. She is unpopular with her subjects for this reason, particularly when in 1626 she refused to attend Charles's heretical coronation.
Oh. It's all quite hard to pin together, isn't it? On one hand, you've got quite a bubbly 15-year-old teenage girl.
Hmm.
And the other, you've got almost like a... papal spy with massive morals to really pin down and make like state level principles.
Anyway, Charles is furious at this and various other things, and he dismisses most of her extensive French household, which also obviously further infuriates Henrietta.
Yeah.
Another source of tension was the Duke of Buckingham. He'd been a favourite, if not outright lover, of James I, and also has a hold over Charles. Henrietta despised him, while he was critical of her at various times as well. But as such, when the Duke of Buckingham is assassinated in 1628, there was space in the grief-stricken Charles I's heart, and they're then able to open up to each other.
Oh, that's nice.
So they then become much, much closer. The future Charles II is born a couple of years later in 1630, followed by numerous other children. And Charles and Henrietta then fall completely in love and are devoted to each other.
That's lovely. But I'd started painting their differences as irreproachable, like that they were, their characters were too different, but they, this...
I think they're coupling this thing. Also, obviously, she's a few years older as well, so she's maybe matured a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
That's and perhaps funny. There were just sort of a lot of people and things that were getting in their way. So actually, there are lots of times where they do get on. Like we saw, there was this, obviously, there was an attraction between them. They do get on in various ways, but there just were a lot of things where they were clashing.
Mm.
And it feels like maybe, you know, he sends her household away, the Duke of Buckingham dies, some of the people that were around them at the time sort of move, and then the two of them are maybe able to find each other without others being in the way.
And also, when you're king and queen, you've got kids. As soon as they start crying, someone takes them away. There's no real stresses on that relationship, is there?
So the 1630s was halcyon days, which Henrietta later recalled as when she was the happiest of women. They're frequently in each other's company. Whenever they're apart, apparently Henrietta kept Charles's portrait propped up next to her in bed.
Oh.
She also becomes one of Charles's closest advisors, which of course allows her to continue to pursue her Catholic mission.
Him fully aware of the whole thing?
Him fully aware of the whole thing. So priests and papal agents are now constantly in residence at her court. A Catholic chapel is built for her at Somerset House, and she succeeds in converting quite a number of people at court, particularly noble women in her household.
Wow, she must be feeling really pleased with life. Like it's all coming together. She's even managing to succeed in this, this venture.
She's happy with life, but many people in the country are appalled at her successes. She's denounced in pamphlets, and an increasingly Puritan parliament criticises Charles for failing to enforce anti-Catholic laws, while the Archbishop of Canterbury, William Laud, warned that a Roman party at court was holding sway.
Hmm.
This perception of a Catholic takeover was heightened in 1638 when Henrietta's mother came to stay. Not like for a short visit, but for years, because she'd been kicked out of France, and her residence at St. James's Palace is frequently surrounded by an angry mob. Charles himself is also unpopular. Since 1629, he's been ruling without Parliament, and there's a growing resistance to religious reforms, with Scotland's opposition to a new prayer book so strong that they actually go to war in 1639.
What England and Scotland do?
Yeah, or Charles and Scotland, sort of. It's kind of the same thing, but sort of...
Weird. Yeah. But he's their king, so that's a civil war.
It is a bit of a civil war.
Oh, blimey, Graham, I can see something very knotty coming along the line here.
Charles is out of money, so Henrietta rallies Catholic nobles to help fund his war chest, but this only, of course, adds to her unpopularity, because you've now got a Catholic queen raising Catholic money to fight Protestant subjects.
Yeah, it's a bit like having a private army with a different... Well, it is a private army with a completely different ethos, like a Wagner or something.
The war also remains unsuccessful, so Charles is forced to recall Parliament in 1640. And this is known as the Long Parliament, and it demands the prosecution of some of his chief advisers, most notably the Archbishop of Canterbury and also the Earl of Strafford, as well as greater prosecution of Catholics. Henrietta does meet with some opposition figures, such as John Pym, who's one of the chief voices in Parliament, in an attempt to reach compromise, but the Scots demand a hard line. So Henrietta and Charles are involved in the formation of a plot to try and free the Earl of Strafford from the Tower of London and for the army, or Northern Army, to come and take control of London. Unfortunately for Charles and Henrietta, the plot fails, and then a hard line is then guaranteed. Charles is forced to sign the Earl of Strafford's attainder, i.e. effectively his death warrant, which is followed by the warrants for the arrest of some of Henrietta's other close allies.
Okay. Netza has closed.
Well, indeed, Henrietta herself is something of a target. This is pushed further when Strafford's death is followed by a brutal rebellion in Ireland against Protestant settlers, with the rebels describing themselves as the Queen's Army.
Hmm. Okay. Nasty.
In December 1641, Parliament issued Charles with the Grand Remonstrance, which was a list of grievances that sort of suggests basically a Catholic conspiracy. Henrietta's not mentioned by name, but clearly is considered a malevolent force in the country by parliamentarians. Convinced that leading figures like Pym are conspiring with the Scots against him, Charles ordered Parliament to surrender five MPs for arrest, but they refused. And Henrietta is said to have helped convince Charles to go and arrest them himself in person. But when he entered the House of Commons in January 1642 with an armed guard, he found that the MPs had been forewarned and already escaped. Charles muttered, "All my birds have flown," left the chamber, and this proved to be the final straw. Charles and Henrietta retreat to Hampton Court, and the Civil War begins.
That's such a cool line, isn't it? Or at least the way you put that all together, those events, that's lovely. And then, boom.
War.
Yeah.
Henrietta's life seemed to be genuinely in danger. Her confessor stated that the Puritans, if they durst, would pull the good queen in pieces. While the Venetian ambassador reported that Parliament had decided to accuse her in Parliament of conspiring against the public liberty and of secret intelligence in the rebellion in Ireland. And Henrietta herself felt the danger, writing that they said publicly that a queen was just a subject and could be punished like anyone else. In February 1642, Henrietta uses a forthcoming marriage of her daughter Mary to William II of Orange. So these are the parents of William III.
Oh.
Charles accompanied her to Dover, where they have an emotional departure, Charles clinging to her as if he did not know how to tear himself away, and then he rode for 4 leagues along the coast, waving his hat until he couldn't see her ship anymore.
Oh, man, this is a film.
Whilst abroad, Henrietta doesn't just keep her head down low. She spends her time raising money, supplies and troops for the war effort, whilst also advising Charles on tactics. And then in early 1643, she returns to England with a fleet of ships laden with ammunition and supplies, but she comes under fire from parliamentary ships early the next morning and only survives thanks to the protection of a Dutch fleet that had accompanied her as a neutral escort.
Wow.
So having landed in Yorkshire, and ultimately securely, she then comes south at the head of a sizeable force, and joins Charles at his headquarters in Oxford, where they have a very emotional reunion. They hold court with as much regal splendour as they could, and Henrietta's supplies are immediately put to good use with Charles's nephew, Prince Rupert. That's Rupert of the Rhine, capturing Bristol.
Have we had big battles at this point? It has started. It's all kicked off.
So Battle of Edgehill, 1642, which is a sort of, well, no score draw, or maybe a score draw. But yeah, we've got country divided, but it's not yet all fully big battle. It's not clear exactly what way things are going yet. Charles advertised his commitment to peace, and when London was rocked by protests for peace and mob violence, Henrietta urged him to take advantage of this and to march on the capital.
Mm-hmm.
Charles doesn't do so, and the parliamentarians ultimately regain control of London and then gain the upper hand in the war. In 1644, they vote to impeach Henrietta and destroy her private chapel at Somerset House. And with Oxford now less secure, Henrietta also heavily pregnant, a decision is made that she needs to get out of the country again.
Hmm.
So she gives birth to a daughter in Exeter, before then making her escape to France just 15 days later with parliamentary ships in hot pursuit again.
Wow. What becomes of that daughter? What's her name? Do we know about her?
She's also called Henrietta, confusingly.
Okay, I wish I never asked.
She does survive, but she can't go with her because it's obviously too dangerous, so she has to leave her behind. In what would prove to be the last time they saw each other, Henrietta had left Charles at Abingdon with what she knew could be her final letter. Mm. "I hope yet to serve you. I am giving you the strongest proof of love that I can give. I am hazarding my life that I may not incommode your affairs. Adieu, my dear heart. If I die, believe that you will lose a person who has never been other than entirely yours, and who by her affection has deserved that you should not forget her."
I mean, I get the sentiment's nice, but I'd have to read it a couple of times.
Yeah, I'm really much more bullet points,
emoji
reactions, and in bold the bits I need to take notes of.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any, flag it if it's really important?
Henrietta does make it safely to France, and she is well received at the court of her nephew now, Louis XIV.
Oh, yeah. Sun King one?
Now. The Sun King, yeah.
And that's her nephew.
Yes.
And he's a bebé?
He's a child when she first comes to France, so it's a regency initially. In England, however, the situation deteriorates further. In 1645, Charles suffers major defeats in the battles of Naseby and Langport, which basically wipes out his army in England, so he flees to Scotland. Ironically, given how everything started, but the Scots aren't entirely in accord with the parliamentarians in England either, so...
He's their king, though, right?
He's still their king, so he hopes that he can do a deal with them. Henrietta urges him to accept terms that would have basically seen all three kingdoms brought into accord with the Covenant and basically all sign up to Presbyterianism.
Well, that was never going to happen, was it?
Well, maybe it could have done, but Charles is a full-on Anglican, so he refuses.
Is he, though? Or does he have any Catholicism going on now? Because he's so far on that... No?
No, I think he is proper Protestant.
So actually, in all of this, he's the one that ends up in the middle. Like, he's the least extreme, is that fair? He's like being led by, guided...
In some ways, the problem for him is obviously he thinks that he believes in the divine right of kings.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not Jam and Jerusalem at this point, is it, Anglicanism?
Yeah, no, he has his own forms of extremity.
Yeah.
So he refuses, and the Scots realise they're not getting anything out of him, so they basically transfer him to Parliament, who then imprison him in Carisbrooke Castle on the Isle of Wight. Henrietta apparently sent a ship to try and rescue him in December 1647, but the wind was against them, so it was stuck in the harbour, and then his guard is strengthened and has to go back without him. Charles then covertly attempts to do a deal with the Scots, having rejected it before, and he's sort of trying to play all sides against each other.
What, saying he'd get behind the Presbyterianism thing?
Apparently there was a plan for like a 3-year trial period.
That's such a weak hand, isn't it? You're in prison.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. We won't prejudge it. Yeah. I've not made my final decision.
Oh dear, Charles. He's not coming across well, is he?
And once this has happened, Oliver Cromwell and others decide that, you know, it's not going to work. So they step in. Parliament is purged of any royalist sympathisers, and Charles is put on trial for treason. And on the 30th of January 1649, Charles is executed, and England becomes a republic. Initially, Henrietta heard a false rumour that the crowd had rushed forward and rescued Charles before his execution, but she was then obviously in disbelief when she learned what really happened and just wept uncontrollably.
Mm.
Briefly considered retiring to a convent, but Henrietta then determined that she was going to stick around and make sure that the monarchy would be restored through her eldest son, Charles.
She's got gump, you know, get up and go, hasn't she, this one? Not to be left down.
However, the exiled royalists are increasingly factional, so Henrietta's ultras favour forceful restoration by French arms, clash with more moderate figures who are hoping for a national uprising.
Hmm.
Now, Henrietta hopes that her son, Charles, will follow her lead in the way that her husband sometimes would. But while they do have a close relationship, Charles doesn't seem to have trusted her judgment, so he chooses to keep his own counsel and sets up court in Cologne to make sure that she is kept at bay.
How old is he at this point?
He is, well, he's 19 when Charles I is executed, but he then has his own little adventure when he comes as crowned King of Scots and then has his 6-week escape from England before he eventually comes back. So he's sort of early 20s, really.
Okay, so it's not like he's being advised and there's this rival council. This is his doing it by this point.
I mean, he will be being advised, but yeah, he is an adult by this point and knows his own mind. He's furious when Henrietta then tries to convert her youngest son, Prince Henry, to Catholicism. So Charles writes to him that while he understood it was the Queen's purpose to do all she can to change your religion, you must never think to see England or me again if he were to comply.
Oh, he's really anti the whole thing then?
Well, Charles understands that there's no way he's going to go back and be king if he's Catholic.
Yeah.
He gets the politics.
What's more important? Him being king or him being Catholic, do you think?
I mean, for him, being king, 100%.
But for her motivations, is she
probably king, but she's probably not able to see the political necessity.
Because otherwise, she's utterly failed, isn't she?
We say he's not anti-Catholic. He does, when he's king, he does try to do more stuff, and he does convert on his deathbed. So,
oh yeah,
you know.
Oh,
she doesn't succeed with the son, Prince Henry, because he is an ardent Protestant, and he resists her efforts, and she basically disowns him in response.
So that's a really tough family to grow up in, when you know that you're setting yourself up for this decision later in life where you're either going to go one way or the other and be disowned or not by one half or the other.
Henrietta's influence seems to be diminishing at this point. War between France and Spain meant that neither country were interested in helping the English royalists. Oh. And indeed, in 1657, France actually makes an alliance with Cromwell.
Really?
Mm. Henrietta's unsuccessful in her efforts to secure an illustrious marriage for Charles. His prospects seem too bleak for anyone to want to take the bait. And she seems to have been increasingly seen as something of an inconvenience. So on one occasion, Henrietta complained to a breach of etiquette when the Duchess of Montpensier inadvertently walked in front of Henrietta's daughter, who would apparently technically outrank her. In response to Henrietta's complaint, Louis's younger brother, Philippe, wondered out loud, "What business do these people to whom we give bread have to walk before us? Why don't they go elsewhere?" However, fortune's wheel does turn again. A power vacuum following Cromwell's death in 1658 sees Charles II return as king in May 1660. Henrietta obviously is delighted at the restoration. She wrote to her sister that, "I hope yet to see before I die my whole family together and no longer vagabonds."
Yeah, that'd be nice too.
She seems to have had some qualms about returning. You know, it'd been 19 years since she'd left England, which is longer than she'd actually been queen of the country.
Oh, right.
And when she did return, it was to little fanfare. Samuel Pepys counted only 3 small bonfires lit in her honour and described her as a very little plain old woman, nothing more in her presence in any respect nor garb than an ordinary woman.
I suppose because at this point she'd be a bit of a legendary figure. She's still only an hour old in my mind, but at this point, she's Samuel Pepys would see her as a grand old political figure, I guess.
Yeah, you know, so to me, almost 20 years, but you know, she was the queen of old and this sort of legendary, almost or notorious legend figure of parliamentary propaganda. And he comes back and he's like, "Oh, she's just a shabby old woman."
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because she was the big evil, you know, the big enemy number one.
Tragically, Henrietta's desire to see her whole family together was not fulfilled, as Prince Henry and her eldest daughter Mary both die of smallpox in 1660, she comes back, before Henrietta comes back, so she generally didn't ever see her son Henry again. However, Charles receives her warmly, and she takes up residence back at Somerset House with a generous pension, and soon presides over a court that's noted for its gaiety.
Really?
Hmm.
And mind you, yeah, she does the old clam dancing, doesn't she? The old jingle bells, whatever it is.
She also developed a close relationship with Charles's new wife, Catherine of Braganza, perhaps seeing a little bit of herself in the new young Catholic queen. In 1661, Henrietta's delighted to secure a marriage for her youngest daughter to Philippe, Louis's younger brother, having now apparently overcome his irritation at the English exiles.
Yeah, because I'm just remembering that programme Versailles.
Yes, so he's the flamboyant
younger and who marries him?
So his first wife is the youngest daughter of Henrietta Maria. Anyway, so this marriage is obviously of delight to her, a very prestigious match for her youngest daughter. It also proves a major boost to Anglo-French relations, and indeed Louis XIV writes to Henrietta on various occasions asking for advice and wants her to help improve relations between the two countries. In 1665, Henrietta is missing her youngest daughter and her life in France, so she decides to go back. So she leaves England, lives with her daughter and some of her grandchildren as well. So the future Queen Anne lives with her for a little bit of time in her infancy. Now, for a while, Henrietta's health has been in decline, but Louis XIV's doctor apparently declared her without danger of death and prescribed her some opium to help her sleep.
And promptly knocks her for 6.
Yes, as soon as she took some, she became insensible, and priests only just had time to deliver last rites and were unable to take a final confession or communion.
What?
And she dies on the 10th of September, 1669, not quite 60 years old.
A heroin overdose? Or an
Well, the doctor insists that overdose. It was a very small dosage, but... Yeah.
That's what...
Got a bit of criticism.
Yeah, you'd come in, you'd expect a bit of heat, wouldn't you, if you kill the... Queen, at this point?
Queen of England, or Queen Dowager.
Dowager, yeah.
She'd be Queen Mother.
That's amazing, because I thought the first time we had that was with, don't tell me, George the V.
Yes. Very good. Well, that was deliberate.
That was deliberate
overdose.
Yeah.
That literally was murder, where this is maybe a manslaughter.
I don't know which is... Well, I mean, I don't know which legally worse.
Quite important that we clarify this one.
But I don't know which I was more shocked by hearing. I think both times it was just such amazing news to hear for the first time there, but that's huge.
Charles II responded to the news of his mother's death with infinite grief and was unable to hold back his tears, and he broke off a hunting party to go to Hampton Court with his wife Catherine for a couple of weeks. Whilst in France, Louis XIV provides her with a grand funeral befitting the daughter of France.
Wow.
So that was the life and consortship of Henrietta Maria. We will review her after a quick break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Battleliness!
Despite being only 15 when she came to England, Henrietta was showing agency right from the off with her Catholic crusade.
Yeah, surprising that was, I thought.
So refusing to attend Charles's coronation, which should also, of course, have been her coronation.
Yeah, oh right, yeah.
It's a pretty extraordinary show of defiance, and she doesn't give an inch to Charles in these early years, so she refused his instruction to reorder her household in the manner of his mother. Then when he told her she should never have affronted me in such a thing publicly, she gave him so ill an answer that he could not repeat it to anyone.
She just gave him an F-bomb.
When he announced the dismissal of her household, she was so furious that she smashed a window with her bare fist.
Oh man, blimey, with her bare fist.
Yeah.
Jeepers creepers, punchy.
This early tension between them was soon overcome, but she didn't let up on religious matters. So as I said, built a private chapel at Somerset House, maintained Catholic priests, official representatives of the Pope, and oversaw a large number of conversions in her social circle. So, you know, effectively she gets what she wants in this.
Amazing.
Henrietta was a key figure in the events that led to the Civil War. During the standoff with Parliament, she was involved, as was Charles, in the development of the plot for a Northern army to come along, take London, seize the Tower, and free the imprisoned Earl of Strafford. And when this failed and Parliament upped the ante, Henrietta is widely believed to have encouraged Charles to arrest the five members, allegedly shouting at him, "Go, you coward! Go and pull those rogues out by the ears or never see my face more!"
She's definitely wears the trousers here. There was a brief period of time when he was going, "Well, but what is this?" And then gave up on it, and it was much easier for them both. Yeah.
It's there's certainly a wide perception of this that's the nature of the relationship. I think her biographer Leander de Lisle pointed out there's a lot of times when Henrietta is frustrated that just because she puts her views across forcefully doesn't mean she always gets what she wants.
Oh right.
So I think Charles is still making the decisions, but equally she has got away in a number of things. So when war came, Henrietta was one of the most important leaders in the Royalist campaign. Though in 1642 she left England for The Hague, she worked tirelessly to raise money and supplies for Charles back in England. She'd smuggled many of the crown jewels out of the country and set about selling these, as well as some of her own personal jewellery across Europe. And it was a bit difficult to achieve at first because the larger pieces were either too expensive or just too politically sensitive for buyers to bite.
Mm. Well, I mean, it's a hot potato.
But ultimately, she does have success. She sold a pearl collar for £16,000 in Amsterdam, and for the war chest generally raised sort of 140,000 guilders from Amsterdam, 40,000 from Rotterdam, and 160,000 from The Hague. And she uses the money to purchase gunpowder, armaments, cannon, sends Charles a gift of horses from the Prince of Orange. It's not known exactly how much made it back to Charles, because some of it is intercepted by Parliament, but it does seem to have been quite a substantial amount.
It's a fascinating role, isn't it? An equivalent today. Gun smuggling. Amazing.
Henrietta urges Charles to secure a northern port where the munitions could land, insisting that we must have Hull. And she urges him to act before Parliament does the same, cautioning that you have already learned to your cost that lack of perseverance has ruined you.
She's properly mothering him, the way she speaks to him.
Sure enough, Charles doesn't manage to take Hull. When Henrietta does return to England in 1643 with further supplies, she ends up coming to Bridlington in Yorkshire. But Parliament was on her tail with six warships opening fire on the house where she was staying early the next morning, as Henrietta relates to Charles. One of these ships had done me the favour to flank my house, which fronted the pier, and before I could get out of bed, the balls were whistling upon me in such style that you may easily believe I love not such music.
Wow. I mean, because this is the age of big broadsides and massive hulking three-tiered cannon galleons and everything, isn't it? Why on earth? I mean, I said this so much in the first series, but this whole era. Come on, film producers, I have to do it myself soon. You know all that mess I'll get myself into.
Henrietta ran out of her house and took shelter in a ditch for 2 hours, the balls always passing over our heads and sometimes covering us in dust, with one of her soldiers killed just 20 paces away from where she was taking cover.
Blimey.
Thankfully, said the Dutch had accompanied her, so the Dutch admiral threatened to open fire unless parliamentary ships dispersed, and she was satisfied that Parliament didn't get the satisfaction of reporting her retreat, whereupon she had 3 eggs for breakfast and then reviewed the troops.
Oh, mate. That is the stuff. She's made of this, whatever it is, she's made of it.
After this, Henrietta attended a council of war in York and then rode at the head of an army to Charles in Oxford. And on the way, she sent her troops to capture the strategically significant town of Burton in Staffordshire. Apparently, the troops fought for 8 hours before capturing the town, with Henrietta watching from a safe distance.
Crikey. But in the distance,
and she seems to have revelled in the experience, referring to herself in a letter to Charles as Her She Majesty Generalissima.
Yeah, and I think she can afford to have a little bit of a flourish in the evening when writing up the day's accounts.
And her arrival does herald an improvement in royalist fortunes. The Venetian ambassador reported that Parliament believed, without her encouragement and aid, the king would never have put himself into a position to resist for so long.
What she needs to be the she-wolf of Fotheringay, or whatever it is.
Or France, indeed.
France,
as the phrase, and Henrietta.
Is that who? So it is her?
No.
Oh.
No, she that's Isabella France and Margaret of Anjou.
Isabella, Margaret and Henrietta.
There you go.
All three can have the same name, but only one could be an ice cream.
Now, the picture is not universally positive. Some historians have argued that while impressive, Henrietta's net contribution to the war was actually negative. It feeds into the conspiracy theories that she was the scheming Catholic power behind the throne, selling off the crown jewels, riding the head of a Popish army. Captured letters between her and Charles suggested various schemes, such as bringing in Irish troops sort things out. One parliamentary pamphlet decried, "She hath brought over foreign forces, set up her standard in the north, and doth daily raise and maintain forces of armed men in this kingdom against the Parliament, and thereby a great army of papists are raised in the north to destroy Parliament and the Protestant religion."
There's no... That is all true, isn't it? Especially if they're foreign troops.
This is the issue, I suppose, for her, that while her efforts from 1642 to 44 are very courageous and impressive, what does it actually achieve in the end? Charles gets a little bit of a boost in 1643, but by 1644, it's all gone south again and she's forced to go back into exile. In 1645, Charles suffers fatal defeats. In exile, she blamed Charles's advisers for his demise after the war, telling the Duke of Ormond angrily that if she had been trusted, the king had now been in England. But Ormond shot back that if she had never been trusted, he had never been out of England.
Both true.
So you could argue perhaps her efforts are a little bit Pyrrhic in nature. Yeah. Very impressive on a personal level, but doesn't change the course of events. And it, in a way, feeds into the negative perception of her that sort of helped fuel the forces against Charles in the first place.
I don't really know how to judge that, because I think it's her leveraging the narrative of the story. She's become the protagonist in all this. Charles might be the figurehead, but she seems to be doing all the manoeuvring. He's getting on with being king and getting all the praise, but as well, far as acumen goes,
not an awful lot of praise for Charles I, to be fair.
No,
Civil War,
no, he's
around.
A figurehead, I suppose.
Obviously, she is the main character for us in this episode, but she isn't the leader of the royalist forces. She's one of the most important leaders, but Charles I is still the leader. And obviously, there's a lot of stuff that's going on that isn't Henrietta. There are lots of battles, that incredibly famous battles of the Civil War that we're not talking about, because obviously she doesn't have anything to do with them at all. There's lots of all sorts of stuff going on that she has no involvement in at all, which on the one hand, I guess, is a reminder that she's not actually the one that's, you know, the supreme general of royal forces. But equally, it's a reminder that she can't help the fact that Charles is militarily losing the war. There's only so much she can contribute.
But her contributions were positive ones. If her passion in life had been judicial reform or something, you'd be trying to persuade me very hard how important a Rex Factory it is. But she's just got this Catholic thing going on. Blimey, she goes for it.
She does.
And really, really, in every single way, she's got battliness. Are you looking? Because I've got a thought, a score summary got ready in my head.
Well, that sounds appropriate.
Okay. If only I had an outlet for such a such a feeling. I think that I'm only being held back from a 10, but the eventual loss, you know, she was on the losing side, but it wasn't as big a player as she wanted to have been. A 9.
I guess the losing side, the validity of that is it's almost like an incredibly courageous, I don't know, king or prince or general or whatever, who sort of leads a foolhardy attack in which they all get slaughtered. It's like, yes, it is incredibly brave, but actually we've ended up in a worse situation than if you just hadn't done anything brave at all.
Yeah,
I think I'm going for 9 as well. It's very strong battliness. She absolutely has that independence and agency, and she gets stuck in. But I think it can't be a 10 for me, because ultimately it's unsuccessful, and I think that in a weird way, some of her efforts, they don't do enough to change the course of the war, but they do help to feed into the continued opposition and sense of danger that Charles's cause represents, because you've got her there.
But, I mean, I'm starting to feel bad for not giving her a 10. Think of her at 15, standing up, saying, "Oh, I'm not going to get crowned with you. What are you talking about?" Darling! Viennetta, the she-wolf of France, is a 10 from me, and I think do what you have to do to give what you think on the back of that is a balanced score, but I think for her to get a 10 from one of us is fair.
Well, I'm still going for the 9. That's okay. That's my score. So 10 from you, a 9 from me. That is 19 out of 20 for battliness.
Scandal!
Much that Henrietta does is considered deeply transgressive for a woman. So, like her predecessor Anne of Denmark, she holds numerous masks at court. But unlike Anne, Henrietta actually has speaking roles, which is a step much too far into actual acting.
Is there a problem with acting still?
A Puritan, William Prynne, had his ears cropped for publishing a pamphlet that declared actresses were notorious whores.
Who's chopping his ears off?
Well, the judicial system.
What's allowed by the state?
Henrietta is not mentioned by name, but the intention of the pamphlet seems pretty clear, because it comes after this, some of her role.
It's specifically aimed at her rather than... That's the problem that the ear choppers have got. Yes. Not that they disagree.
Yeah.
Right.
Likewise, you know, riding at the head of an army, calling herself Generalissima, goes against the natural order of things. And of course, you know, notoriously, she's an out and proud Catholic when England's deeply Puritan.
I mean, that on its own.
Mm.
It's huge.
Now, so some of these things we're probably going to talk about more in subjectivity as negative subjectivity, but I think it's still worth bearing in mind, you know, that it would definitely make the news the next day and the Queen refused to attend the coronation.
Oh, man. I mean, think about the papers today. When these guys have no power, Meghan in Kate Snub changes name on birth certificate I saw the other day on her sidebar. I mean, goodness me, Graham. I think we're looking at another really punchy one here.
What Montagu was a great favourite of Henrietta's and her most notable conversion, and rumours in Europe suggested that he is not in the King's best graces, but the Queen does all she can to make him another Count Philippe. This being a reference to someone in Europe that one of her sisters was having an affair with.
Okay.
Sometimes he has to do without the Queen's embraces for 2 months at a time, but only because the occasion is lacking. Another long-term close advisor was Henry Jermyn, and there are rumours that after Charles' execution, they'd secretly married, a suggestion that Barbara Villiers, future mistress of Charles II, was their love child, and even that all the royal children were Jermyn's bastards.
It's just going into overdrive now. Everyone's accused of doing everything with everyone.
Yeah, there's no evidence of any of these rumours at all, so they're almost certainly just an invention of her enemies. Henrietta and Charles do seem to be genuinely in love, and her Scottish confessor admitted her sins were more omission than commission. Or commission.
I don't know what that means.
Omission as in the things that she hasn't done, as opposed to commission.
Oh, right.
Things that she has done.
She asked, yeah.
So that's what I've got for scandal. So not loads of detail there, but she's a scandalous figure, but more flouting convention.
It's in danger of being overshadowed by that last big round. But I think we could very easily start seeing this as a biggie as well. It doesn't have all of the sex scandal, sure.
Mm.
But they were in very much in love, which allowed for all the for her role in the other areas. But it really is huge, isn't it? What she ends up doing with her power? How scandalous the course of action is to take on, you know, to as a queen to be a gun runner and well, even the very very from a very young age saying she's not going to be crowned with the king. I feel like everything that happened was a bit scandalous, and everything is. It's hard to judge this one.
I feel like she definitely is a notorious queen at the time amongst her enemies. But equally, I can imagine that if you were part of the royal court, the idea that she was a scandalous queen would have seemed bizarre. The flip side of how you could view her later actions is that she is the wife of the king, supporting him against his enemies. So Parliament would see that, you know, all of her efforts,
against the eventual winners.
Yeah. Is whose perception of it being transgressive that's the big issue. And the whole thing feels just so heightened.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole... exactly. I sort of feel like spidey senses are alerted and everything's got a whiff of something about it because it's so polarised. Everything's going to be scandalous to one of the people involved.
Mm-mm.
Seven.
But it feels like we don't have the big... scandalous events of like, I mean, it's extreme, obviously, to go back to Anne Boleyn and.
But did she beat
someone
them?
Like Elizabeth Woodville, who was a notorious figure, like Edward the Fourth's wife?
Mm.
I think she got 11 or something, which maybe because we felt like there were a lot of rumours about her that weren't true.
Oh man, I feel like she was scandalous. I reckon we should match that.
But I sort of feel it's similar-ish to that, whereby she's. She is quite notorious and she has her enemies, but she isn't actually in herself being scandalous all of the time. So I'm going to go a 6 for scandal, which I don't know if that's maybe a little bit harsh, but I think it's because I'm seeing some of these things being more symptomatic of other factors than of the scandal. So 7 from you, 6 from me, 13 for scandal.
Subjectivity.
Henrietta has a love of theatre. As queen, she patronises an acting company, Queen Henrietta's Men. She took a leading role in Masks, as we mentioned, held annual performances, and while her 1632 mask Pastoral was controversial because she had a speaking part, to her credit, she had over 600 lines to learn and did it pretty well, so, you know. Outside of the theatre, she was a patron of the composer Nicholas Lanier, who was the first master of the King's music, and helped appoint William Davenant as poet laureate after the death of Ben Jonson.
Okay.
And she retained Inigo Jones as surveyor of works during the 1630s.
Lovely.
She was a knowledgeable collector of art, particularly enjoying the work of Orazio Gentileschi, who with his daughter Artemisia painted the huge ceiling paintings of Queen's House at Greenwich, which I think might be at Marlborough House now, but still. And she also sits for Anthony van Dyck, who's sort of like Stuart Holbein, 25 times.
Sits for him 25 times?
Hmm. Now, while, as we will see, many of her subjects would disagree, in some ways, when you get to know her a little bit better, she can be a surprisingly sympathetic personality. She had a love of the outdoors, so when she first came to London, she enjoyed just going for walks in the meadows by the Thames, and on one occasion took up a rake and joined haymakers in their work.
Yeah. It's easy, though, when you can put it down again.
Oh, yeah. She found pomposity inherently amusing, so one example was an ambassador chose to deliver a 90-minute speech to her in Latin, despite the fact that she didn't speak Latin. So her translator gave up halfway through, and she was apparently trying so hard to suppress her giggles that when he finished, she only managed a very concise and almost voiceless answer.
Oh, sweet.
A different ambassador came to deliver his official farewell to Henrietta, but mistook her dwarf for her eldest son. And then his frantic apologies when he realised the error only served to make her laugh more.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. So she's got a sense of humour.
Yeah, and she could also laugh at herself. So in one of her letters to Charles from exile, she told him that she would pray for the man of sin who is married to the popish brat of France. Even in the context of the hedonism of Charles II's Restoration Court, Henrietta's court in England was celebrated for its gaiety. John Evelyn recorded that she stayed up late regaling people with stories of her escapes during the war, while Pepys said that her court was full of laughing and mirthing and developing a reputation for being the greatest court nowadays.
Yeah, we should have some hell of a stories. Taking a broadside at a premier inn in Hull has got to, that'll take up 15 minutes at least.
Now, although Henrietta's promotion of Catholicism shows personal agency, it's arguably not particularly good subjectivity given how deeply unpopular it is for her predominantly Protestant subjects.
Mm.
1626, she seems to be going out of her way to cause offence. As she said, she refused to attend the coronation, and she was reported to have been seen laughing, frisking and dancing whilst watching the procession from Whitehall. She interrupts an Anglican service in Hampshire, so she just bursts in and then just walks around talking and laughing loudly.
Mm-hmm.
Just mid-ceremony. She even went on a little pilgrimage within London where she kneeled before Tyburn gallows and prayed the space of 5 minutes. So this is basically showing solidarity with Catholic martyrs, Tyburn being where all the executions took place. Also, Henry VIII had made pilgrimages illegal. So,
yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's so bold.
It's bold, but we're in subjectivity now, and this isn't really good subjectivity at all. It's really the exact opposite of what you would, as a country, want your queen to do.
But unless,
she also breaks the law by hearing mass and facilitating Catholic marriages. She sees herself as a handmaid of Catholicism, so she's regularly associated in art with the Virgin Mary, as well as promoting the ideals of Catholic spirituality and Marian devotion in her masks. And she is having some success. She secures prominent converts at court. One observer lamented in 1638 that our great women fall away every day. Now, all of this matters because of the impact it has, really, on Charles's reign and the country as a whole. Henrietta's promotion of Catholicism and Charles's failure to enforce the law, his acquiescence in all of this, is one of the primary grievances of the Long Parliament in 1640. So there's a genuine widespread belief that Henrietta is this cuckoo in the nest trying to overthrow the Protestant Church. So in 1639, in 1639, the Scots complained that we know as well what the honest king does in his bedchamber as that papist wench that lies by his side, the only animator of the best sort against us. And so while there's elements of misogyny, elements of xenophobia, as you say, it is technically true. She is on something of a Catholic crusade.
Completely.
And, you know, it's less than 50 years since the gunpowder plot, so fears of grand conspiracies, grand Catholic conspiracies, aren't really all that outlandish.
No. feels like she's so so obvious about it. She's goading people into making a big deal out of it.
Yeah. And they do make a big deal out of it. So she and her Catholicism is seen as one of the key factors in the outbreak of the Civil War. John Pym declared that all the danger and mischief that has befallen this state has proceeded from her. While Peter Wentworth argued it was high time to lay the axe to the root, as she was, of all their calamities.
Mm. She is.
And she's a very unpopular queen, and you could say for reasons that are actually largely within her control.
Mm.
So Susan Dunn Hensley concluded, she intended to support the Stuart dynasty as well as English Catholics. Instead, she literalized Protestant fear of foreign Catholic invasion, and in so doing proved particularly dangerous to the Stuart throne.
Yeah, completely. I think this is the first one, though, that first episode where I haven't taken the side of the public when someone's been unpopular, because I really like her somehow.
But all this stuff is very much against the country's religion, against what the country wants to do. It causes huge unpopularity. It largely provokes the civil war that brings about the entire fall of the monarchy, not just the Stuarts, but the monarchy for a time.
Yeah.
That's not good subjectivity. That's not what you want your queen to do.
No, and I was trying to big up her part in that in battliness. So I think you're only right that that's balanced here.
It's worth recalling also how her influence wanes with the death of Charles I. Charles II loves his mother. And they do have a close relationship in many ways, but he is also a much more shrewd, cynical and pragmatic man than his father. And he knew exactly what he needed to do to survive. And it's very clear from his attitude in the 1650s that he does not trust his mother's judgment in matters of state. So she'd set up the royalist in exile at Saint-Germain, just outside of Paris, but Charles moves his court to Cologne so as to basically just avoid her. And her attempt to convert Prince Henry, the younger brother, just showed exactly why Charles doesn't want her counsel.
Yeah.
He sees exactly how damaging it would be for his cause to have his brother publicly convert to Catholicism. Henrietta either doesn't see it or doesn't care, and I guess Charles II thinks, you know, much as I like you, you are just a disaster area.
Yeah, because she is powerful and motivated and trouble.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, not good.
No, so we have a bit, you know, we've got some art stuff, we've got some theatre stuff, we've got a bit of sense of humour, but it's...
Yeah, but that's just what was going on. I really like her, and this has shown a bit of the character that has brought her to life a bit. Two.
Yeah, I'm thinking about a zero, possibly.
Really?
It's not that there isn't anything good. There is some good stuff in there, but I just feel like the negatives so outweigh the positives.
Yeah.
You know, would you want to be her subject? I think the answer, certainly for most of the subjects, I mean, they couldn't really have given a more forceful no than they did.
Yeah, what even would I be giving two for?
I guess liking her,
but
ignoring that stuff.
I think liking her should come out in my my decision over the Rex factor.
I mean, it can be a factor in subjectivity because you think, you know, would you like to be a subject? But I think it's possible to sort of like somebody, but equally not.
Yeah.
Want anything to do with them in reality, like them at a distance.
Yeah. I'm going to go down to one.
Okay. So it's a one from you, a naught from me. That is a one for subjectivity.
Longevity.
So Henrietta Maria is Queen Consort from the 13th of June 1625 to the 30th of January 1649, which is a reign of 23 years and 7 months, so that's 23.58. She is also... first time in a long time we've been able to say this, Queen Mother from the 29th of May 1660 to the 10th of September 1669, which is 9 years and 3 months, which is 9.25 years. So overall, that's 32.83 years of queenship, though the Queen Mother years only gets half marks, so we bring that down to a total of 28.21 years. That equates to a score of 15.5, which is the 13th best overall.
Okay, not bad. She's going to be a high scorer.
Mm.
Dynasty! Not the program.
Henrietta has six children.
Oh.
who survived Charles I. So that gives her a score of 16 for Dynasty, which is joint 8th overall.
That is good.
So that gives her a total score of 64.5, which is the 7th best that we've had thus far. So that's just half a mark above Elizabeth Woodville.
That's probably fair. I love it when that happens. I think she's spot on in Elizabeth Woodville.
But, of course, it's not all about the score. Does she have that certain something, lasting legacy, the great achievement, the star quality that we call...
Rex Factor!
I think she's a shoo-in.
Hmm. Go on.
It's almost like she knew the brief. It's so battly. It's so feisty. It's a pivotal point in history, and yet somehow she comes across as likeable.
Likeable, I guess, in a certain context.
Yeah. I mean, she would have been hated by the other side, but her personality, I mean, is translates well today. There's an awful lot there. Properly battly. Mm. And then coming back for poached egg and, or what was it, boiled egg and soldiers or something. And for that reason alone.
I mean, as soon as we got eggs in there, you know.
Yeah, did have me at eggs. Eggs and boats in one, and a nice, in a really punchy anecdote.
She definitely, it was a lot more than I was expecting to get out of her. I wasn't expecting such a strong sort of role in the Civil War, albeit it's only really as kind of a 2-year period, and she's sort out of it for all the rest of it.
Are you gonna butt here?
Well, I am gonna butt. So I guess my question with her is, you know, as I said, deeply unpopular, partly responsible, but perhaps not as responsible as it's easy to see when our focus is just on her and we're not looking at the much, much broader issues that are going on in the build-up to the Civil War. You know, we're not talking about the divine right of kings and all that sort of stuff. We're not talking about all of the battles and the sieges and stuff that takes place. So it's easy then just to see it through this one person and thus think that that's all that's going on, whereas actually there's a lot of other stuff that she doesn't have anything to do with. I guess and you can be all of those things and have the Rex factor. I guess my question with her is sort of what's her big thing that she does that's like really good? Because in some way she reminds me a bit of Eleanor of Provence, who is consort to Henry III, quite unpopular as a foreign...
I mean,
they all were, but foreign queen who comes in, advanced the cause of her countrymen at court, which causes a lot of unrest, ultimately is a factor in the outbreak of the Barons' War. She goes into exile and uses her royal connections to raise money and troops, and actually does raise a actual massive army that she was going to come and invade with, but then there were storms, couldn't get over, and the army dispersed before she got there. And ultimately Eleanor of Provence didn't get it, because you thought, well, that was her thing. She'd got this big army that she'd raised, but it doesn't then come and do anything, and it was left to Edward to actually sort it out rather than Eleanor. So I just wonder with Henrietta, like, is there actually a thing like Eleanor of Provence's fleet that didn't sail? Does Henrietta have the thing that did happen that she did? Or is it just that she does a lot of impressive agency and battliness, but actually doesn't really ultimately do or achieve anything?
I do see that. I do see that, but I just feel she's still got that certain something. I think she's got that certain something, and it was thwarted. I'm not going to be too upset that it's not a unanimous, but I think,
well, maybe. I mean, I was definitely coming, like, sometimes when you said yes and I've said no, I've come into it and I've been surprised when you've said yes.
Oh, really?
Where this one, I thought, oh, yeah, there is quite a lot of battliness there. And then I thought, oh, well, I think Ali's probably going to say yes, because there's a lot of this impressive battliness. So then I thought, well, is that... So I thought, should I be giving the Rex Factor? Is that enough in and of itself? Or is it just like that person wrote in and said, if they have battliness, you give them the Rex Factor? And then otherwise, nothing else is really playing into it.
I am guilty of that.
So am I guilty of that? Or am I going to think, oh, well, no, she doesn't do this, she doesn't do that? I then think about Isabel of Angoulême, who's John's wife, and another sort of similarity in a sort of bad guy, sort of misplaced battliness, or it has slightly disastrous consequences and doesn't achieve the aims, and in many ways is on the losing side, perhaps because of poor judgment and battliness. But it is impressive, and I was surprised by it, and... Like, I think there is this sort of notoriety element of, you know, if she's one of the factors in the Civil War happening, that is quite an interesting thing. That is quite a notorious thing. So I don't think that she's a good queen. But yeah, I think she probably does have a certain something about her, which I think is the right factor. I don't think she has a great achievement or great legacy, really.
She certainly doesn't have a single great achievement. Lasting legacy. Oh man, am I going to reverse it and you're going to say
So I don't think she's got the great achievement. I don't think she's got the lasting legacy. But I think she does have a certain something and a bit of a star quality. You know, Margaret of Anjou, absolutely, you know, the most extreme example of just ending and just horrible vanquished defeat with her husband dead, her son dead, poverty in France, everything that she's fought for, gone. So she doesn't have any legacy or ultimately isn't left with a great achievement, although she does great things, but still can be impressive within it.
I think she's got a Rex Factor spirit that could be plopped into someone else. She's got that. So it is a certain something.
Mm. So I think I'm going to say yes as well. Ooh. Henrietta Maria.
Congratulations. I mean, it's a bit muted, isn't it?
Rex Factor. Yeah, it's a funny one. Like, I can't see her competing against t'others that we've got thus far. But I think it is impressive, you know, the, as you said, just the that sheer gumption of, you know, not refusing to attend the coronation, just pushing the Catholic stuff all over the place, and then continuing to, because she'd have thought that when she and Charles come to accommodation, that's when she would have quieted down and stopped it. But no, she's like, I'm still doing it.
Correspondence Corner.
So that is Henrietta Maria. We have said she does have the Rex Factor. Let us know what you thought about her. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Rex Factor Pod. Email rexfactorpodcast@hotmail.com and remember to send in a hashtag consult card for an episode image of Henrietta. If you'd like to support the podcast, be sure to subscribe on whatever podcast provider you use. Donate monthly to join the Privy Council and get access to over 200 bonus episodes, as well as our Discord chat at patreon.com/RexFactor. And we have some new Privy Councillors to welcome to the fold.
Jack Evans, Julie Crockford, Whitney Rutherford, Anna Dippy, Rebecca Whitman, Carrie Mick, Poppy Feeney, Amy Kaufman, Lauren Thomas, Abigail Boitz, Caitlin Chapman, Emily, Catherine Carr, Christopher Rainbow, Sylvia Burton, Andrew Khan Balin, Ben Jenkins, Julius Shabazian, Kinnefreth, Courtney Feely, Erin Hicks, Joanna Smith, Helen Hayward, Alex Bruce, and R. Selwood.
So that is all from us today. Next time, we will be reviewing someone who is decidedly not a queen consort. Elizabeth Cromwell.
Oh, yeah. That'll be interesting.
Hmm. See you next time.
Cheerio, bye.